Wheeland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.
The race for the 17th Congressional District in Illinois. We talked to both candidates on the cities. For the first time ever, all four candidates for the two Quad City congressional districts are women. Next week, we'll talk with Democrat Rita Hart and Republican Marionette Miller-Meeks, who want to represent Eastern Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. But first, we want to feature the two candidates running for the Illinois 17th of Western Illinois. That would be Esther Joy King, the Republican, and Democratic incumbent Sherry Bustos. We recorded the interview separately using social distancing standards at the Moline Black Box Theater. A coin flip determines who goes first, and that is Representative Sherry Bustos. You always have to start with the question, why should the public elect or re-elect you? Why?
Well, let me start by saying it's an honor of my lifetime that the people in this congressional district have elected me to represent them in Washington, D.C. And I think that when you look at, if you're a member of Congress, if you're a mayor, if you're a state rep, anybody who's in public service of any sort, I think it gets down to really three things. And that is that you work hard. I mean, I make a good wage, and so I better work hard and make sure that I'm earning that wage. If something is going on, you better fight for the people you represent. And number three, you better get results. And it doesn't matter that in my first three terms that I served in the minority, or in this last term, I've been in the majority, we've been able to get results, whether it's getting money from the COVID relief package back here, whether it's just this past congressional session alone getting $100 million for the Rock Island Arsenal, whether it is making sure that I'm fighting for our family farmers who have been hurting desperately, not just because of what's going on with the change in flooding, drought, et cetera, but because of really bad agricultural policy, whether it's through trade or whether it's through the ethanol industry. So that's really the core, making sure that one of our largest employers is we're doing right by it, the arsenal. Our biggest economic driver is agriculture, so doing right by the family farmer. And small businesses, making sure that through our COVID relief packages that we are helping our small businesses and our families. So I've worked hard to deliver, and I hope that people will see that when they take a look at my track record.
One area that there hasn't been much progress in lately, as far as we know, is a second COVID relief program with perhaps another $1,200 check for a number of Americans. Is that something that you support, and should it be coming sooner rather than later?
I do support it, and it should have come not only sooner, but it should have come way sooner. It should have come months ago. So let me give you a little of the track record legislatively of what's happened. It was now 5 months ago that we passed what was called the HEROES package. There was money in there, more money for small businesses who are still hurting. There was the $1,200 stimulus check that would go to families, to individuals. There was help for our first responders. There was money in there for tracking and tracing and treating anybody who has anything to do with COVID. There was money for state and local governments, and we should, if we can drill down on that, I'd like to, because we have 150 towns in this congressional district, and almost down to the last one, they are hurting. So that was 5 months ago that we passed that. And if you remember the chain of events, Mitch McConnell said he was going to take a pause. That was his word. I think it's very clear that this pandemic has not taken a pause, not one bit. We are now 215,000 American lives lost, going on 8 million Americans who have contracted COVID-19. And so fast forward, while the Senate side has taken this pause, I go back out to Washington, D.C. We pass another HEROES Act. We call it HEROES 2.0 because we were willing to compromise. We brought down the price tag, which was a request from the administration. I was literally on a call with our leadership when President Trump sent out that tweet just about a week ago now, where he said, stop negotiations. I have no doubt that Secretary Mnuchin was on his way to the Speaker's office to continue those negotiations. So we have had tens of thousands of lives lost in that interim period from when we passed the first HEROES Act to the second HEROES Act. And still, there has been an unwilling partner to get that over the finish line. So my answer to you is yes, we need it. We desperately need it. Families desperately need it. The unemployed Quad Cityans and people all over Illinois and all over this country desperately need it. Our kids need it. Our economy will be able to get back on track when we have this parallel movement on getting past this pandemic. That will not happen without a national strategy. And this is something that we have called out for really since the start of this pandemic. We need a national strategy. Tracing, tracking, treating, making sure that the Defense Production Act is in play so we can make all of this happen. It has been, I believe, one of the biggest missteps that history will look back on this administration and say this was a terrible, terrible misstep that has harmed families all over this country.
We have gone from the Great Recession into the Great Pandemic, and you're talking about spending America's debt now $3.1 trillion for this year. National debt just recently broke an astounding $27,216,000 per U.S. taxpayer. Can we keep doing this? I mean, I know people will say you got to spend your way out of a recession, or you got to have this support for the American people and for businesses. But for the government as a whole, how can we keep doing this?
We can't keep doing this. But when you're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, when thousands of people, tens of thousands of people are contracting this virus every single day now, we have to first and foremost get past this pandemic. Even the Fed chair has said this is the time to make sure that we've got a full-on plan financially to get out of this recession and to get out of this pandemic. But long-term, we cannot continue to do this. But I think it's worth pointing out that the tax, and I call it a tax scam, that passed. I voted against it, but under this administration, where 83% of the benefits, 83% of the benefits went to the top 1% richest billionaires in this country. They don't need the breaks. It is working people. You know, the folks who are building our combines down the street in at John Deere Harvester Works, the people who work at Genesis and at Trinity, those frontline workers who go into work every single day to support their families. I do something called Sherry on Shift. I've done 100 of them. And the reason I bring this up in this context is because I work shoulder to shoulder with people who are processing carp out of the Mississippi River, or changing the bulbs and street lights from a cherry picker that's 30 feet off the ground, or people who are building, are making fencing. 100 of these different jobs. And when I work shoulder to shoulder with these people, I always like to ask them, what do they like to do for fun? And the reason I ask that is because it gets to people's disposable income. It gets to, do they have enough money to pay their bills and then do something special for their families? And very quick story. Home care nurse, her husband worked full-time. She worked full-time. They had two kids. And when I asked her that question, what she did for fun, she said, we have cable television. Something that probably you and I take for granted, that we have cable television. And so I said, well, do you not like to go to the movies? And she said, this was pre-COVID. And she said, well, by the time you buy four tickets and popcorn and soda, we can't afford that. So instead of being able to afford maybe once in a lifetime to be able to go to Disney World, they have to settle for the Disney Channel. And I just think when I look at that tax scam and all those benefits go to the top 1%, and there's just a little bit left over for the rest of the 99%, that's wrong. I bring that up in context to the debt and deficit, because what that tax scam did is add to the debt and deficit that we have in our nation. We were heading in a good direction with a very strong economy coming out of the last administration. And even pre-pandemic, our debt and deficit were growing by leaps and bounds every single year under this administration. And we do have to address it.
Affordable Care Act, when we're talking about health care, you've seen it being dismantled over the last 4 years. A more conservative Supreme Court could finish whatever is left of Obamacare. You have fought, of course, for the Affordable Care Act. What would you like to see if reelected as far as health care is concerned? And is it really dependent upon who is in the White House?
I think it depends very much on who's in the White House. I think it also depends on who's in Congress. And this is an area where the person running against me and I differ tremendously. Little context. I worked in healthcare. That's what I did for a living before being elected to Congress. And in that time, I worked in healthcare for a decade. It was before the Affordable Care Act passed. It was during that time that it passed. And it was after it was passed. So I worked in that 10-year period. I've seen what was going on in healthcare. We were on an unsustainable path. The cost of healthcare was going up higher than anything in America, other than higher ed. They were both going up tremendously. However, while those costs were going up like this, patient results, patient outcomes were not improving. Okay, so that's an unsustainable path. We pass it. And while the rollout was flawed, because it was, you can look at the first couple years of the Affordable Care Act and say, you know, this really isn't working very well. But what's happened in the meantime is 22 million Americans have health insurance who didn't before, who were uninsured or underinsured. For the first time, we told health insurance companies that they cannot discriminate against anybody who has had cancer or diabetes or a heart attack or had a child born with some kind of ailment. For the first time, insurance companies cannot charge more for a woman because she is considered a pre-existing condition just because of her gender. So all of that was part of the Affordable Care Act. The fact that preventive care, for the first time, was offered so we could help keep families healthy. That's all part of the Affordable Care Act. All of that goes away. All of that goes away. If the court case that this administration has taken all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court will begun to be heard exactly 1 week after this election. My opponent favors getting rid of the Affordable Care Act. She likes to talk in terms that, well, she likes the pre-existing condition part of that. But let me tell you, it's the Affordable Care Act is the only law on the books that protects people with pre-existing condition. There are no other laws on the book that protect people with pre-existing conditions. So if this Supreme Court, absent Ruth Bader Ginsburg, with a new, what appears to be a 6-3 court, meaning the more conservative and the less conservative, the more moderate or farther left or farther right, is the 6-3 makeup. And that's on the ballot. Healthcare is on the ballot. And for the folks in this congressional district, this is what I do. I know healthcare inside and out. I know it from a very personal perspective. It's why I ran for Congress. My biggest motivation was the fact that my brother was on his deathbed when my predecessor was elected. And my brother died within a week of that election. And that election was about my predecessor saying he was going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Have so, very little left time.
All right.
About 30 seconds
right.
left. I apologize
okay.
for the time limit. Your critics on the Republican side say you're too much linked with Democratic leadership. Progressives say that you've become an establishment candidate. Very quickly, who is Sherry Bustos when it comes to the political spectrum?
I always find it interesting that, you know, one person or one group can see me this way and another group can see me that way. You know, look, I'm a lifelong Illinoisan. I've lived here my entire life. I've lived in the Quad Cities for 35 years. My husband, who's the sheriff of Rock Island County, he and I have raised our three boys here. We now have three grandkids. One of our grandson was just born 2 months ago. This is my home. I know the people here. I come from a long line of farmers. We come from a long line of union workers on my husband's side of the family who, you know, worked at John Deere. This is what I am. You know, there's nothing that's fancy about me. My goal is to work hard, fight for people, get results. I do think it's worth noting because of the attacks that are on the air against me. 80% of the bills that I have voted for this congressional session, 80% have been bipartisan bills. Three quarters of the bills that I have written myself, that I have introduced, on day one, I sought out Republican co-sponsors. Three quarters of my own bills. So this claim that I'm, anything but somebody who's lived in Illinois my whole life, come from a long line of farmers and raised our kids here, it's not who I am. It's been an honor to be able to serve in this area. I hope I can continue to do that. My goal will be to make sure that I continue to fight for people and do the best job I possibly can.
Our thanks to Representative Sherry Bustos. Her challenger is Republican Esther Joy King. She won a Republican primary challenge this spring to represent the Republican Party ticket on the November ballot. This is Esther Joy King. So what do you tell voters? Why is it that they should vote for you?
Yeah. Jim, when I'm out and about talking with people, the number one thing that people say to me is, Esther, we need change. And I represent that change for the Illinois 17th Congressional District. People are just upset. Whether Democrat or Republican, we know that Washington is not working for us right now, right? And I get to be a person of energy and dedication. This is something I'm doing out of a sense of duty. And people want to be a part of this. People are just so excited to have someone who's willing to do the work to represent us better. And I'm just proud to be a part of this and humbled to be a part of this with so many citizens and people of the Illinois 17th. It's grown, Jim. This campaign has grown beyond me, and it's a movement at this point.
The number one topic, of course, is always going to be COVID-19 during this election. There's been a bit of a pause as far as the creation of a stimulus plan for the United States, maybe another $1,200 check that would help individuals and families. What do you want to see in any stimulus package that could get passed as soon as possible?
Jim, I think the Paycheck Protection Program we've seen has worked to help get money where it needs to go. I believe targeted stimulus is the most effective stimulus, making sure we're getting dollars into the hands of workers, into the hands of small business owners. That's what's going to help us get us up and running again. We have suffered a lot economically in this part of the state. I've talked with a small business owner, for example. I talked with a former restaurant owner. They had just invested their entire life savings into opening a new restaurant in February. And he said, Esther, we're just not going to make it. We can't get through this. So many people are having a hard time right now. And I believe we need a stimulus package that very carefully targets getting dollars into the hands of the people that need help right now.
What about a government that needs help? Local government, all the way from the township, all the way to state government. Is that something that you see is really important at this stage?
I think helping people is more important at this stage, Jim, and we need to be very careful and considerate of how we're still helping municipalities, particularly, for example, the state of Illinois. We know that we're in the financial state that we're in right now because of mismanagement and corruption at the state level, and I do not believe the federal government should be bailing out the poor choices of Illinois state politicians.
$3.1 trillion deficit this year alone, $27 trillion that the United States is in debt. We're talking about stimulus packages. We're talking about the money that was needed to get us out of the Great Recession. We got to start paying these bills. How do you see that happening?
Yeah. Well, just like we would at a personal level, we don't shift from poor financial choices to financial responsibility overnight. It is a process. It is something that we have to commit to, financial responsibility at the federal level. I see it happening over a long period of time, but just again, like we see the rewards of positive personal choices in our lives, if we say, you know, I'm going to eat healthy and we do it day after day after day, that same way at the federal level, if we say we're going to be financially responsible and we commit to it year after year after year, we can turn this ship around.
Well, the nonpartisan Responsible Federal Budget Commission predicts trillion-dollar deficits in the years to come. Each year, another trillion-dollar at least being added. So it's really no light at the end of the tunnel right now.
Well, that's why we need new representation. I am one representative, but I have seen a wave of young people, of conservatives standing up across the United States, and I'm proud to be part of this team that's saying, no more. The way things are being done right now is not okay. We need more fiscal responsibility. We need representatives that are actually going to do the job, not just sign a big paycheck and let the government function as it's always functioned. Status quo isn't working. That is something that's very obvious right now. And it is time for change. And I'm just excited and, again, humbled to be part of bringing that here for the Illinois 17th.
As we're talking about COVID-19, there are some agencies that are at the forefront of trying to defeat this virus or to find a vaccine. You talk about the CDC or the FDA, and yet the president has really questioned these scientists and have questioned these agencies' ability to really protect the American public. How do you see the CDC as well as the NIH, even, and the National Institutes of Health, all of these organizations? Are you going to be confident that they can actually get at COVID-19 and an effective virus, effective vaccine, rather?
Yes. Jim, I am actually amazed at what we're seeing, particularly on the vaccine side. The effort that we've seen to bring a vaccine is the fastest that it's ever happened in history. So the fact that in just 9 short months, we're already looking at a potential vaccine is evidence of incredible innovation and private market results coming about. And we've seen the federal government partner with some of these private companies to develop vaccines in a wonderful way that I think is innovation at work. And as far as the CDC specifically, I think we have seen good information and positive efforts to help advise. Like, there's so much confusion, there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot going on, and so the CDC has worked very hard to help just individuals know what decisions are right for us. So ultimately, I do believe that it's individual freedom. It's our choice to take care of our own health, to make sure we're being a good community member and taking care of those around us, making sure we're protecting the vulnerable population. Ultimately, I believe it should be community-based solutions with support from the federal government.
But as you know, I mean, there's people that will not wear a mask, or there's going to be people who will not get vaccinated if a vaccine comes. What about you? Will you do these things? And what would you say to somebody who says, I wouldn't get vaccinated no matter what?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do believe that we need to have personal responsibility for our own bodies. So if someone has, for example, a health concern, so they're not able to take the vaccine, they need to make that choice for themselves. For example, I met a young girl in 8th grade, and she has Lyme's disease, and she's not able to take vaccines. It will inflame the condition that she already has. I don't think the government needs to tell that mother, that family, your daughter is required to take a vaccine. However, I will certainly be taking the vaccine. I believe it is, if possible, if we can, it's an ideal thing to help be a responsible citizen in our communities.
I know that the Republicans and the Trump administration have renegotiated trade agreements, a get tough policy with China, which automatically reacted by pretty much going after the American farmer. Bankruptcies on farms higher, 4% higher than last year. Are you worried about the farm policy in the United States right now?
Jim, I spend a lot of time talking with farmers. I just hear from them regularly. Esther, we're committed to what President Trump is doing. We know that China needs to be held accountable, but we can't take it on the chin for the entire American economy. So I believe we need to have a voice at the table, a representative who is part of the conversations, part of standing up for agricultural industry, not attacking and criticizing, but advising and being a part of the representation as part of trade deals, as part of legislation that's being passed. I think there's a lot more productivity and positive results that we can achieve for our district by being part of the conversation.
You, of course, have a link to Arsenal Island. Tell me what you want to do to make sure that Arsenal Island remains viable in this area.
Yeah. I am proud to be a soldier in the United States military. I have done my reserve duty at the Arsenal Island annually. And actually, Jim, the Arsenal Island is where I bought my first Army uniform when I joined the Army. So it is a very personal connection. Arsenal Island is one of our largest employers here in the Quad Cities. They employ over 6,800 civilians and military personnel, and they support over 50,000 active and reserve soldiers here in the area. It is a critical piece of the heartbeat of our economy here in the Quad Cities. And I know that because of my military experience, being someone who has experienced what it is to drive through those gates every morning, that I am going to be an incredible advocate for our Arsenal Island, not just as an employer, but also as a manufacturer, as a military base, as a shining jewel in our economy here in the Quad Cities.
You have your campaign ads have really pointed out that a vote for Sherry Bustos is a vote for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Is a vote for you the same as a vote for Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell?
It's not. So I plan to be bipartisan in the House of Representatives, and I certainly believe that Donald Trump's agenda and the policies that he's putting forward are much better for our country than Vice President Joe Biden's policies. I mean, Joe Biden has said he wants to raise taxes on every single American. And especially coming off of a pandemic, Jim, that is not the right thing to do to get us restarted economically. To take people's money, to reach into their pockets and take their money is not going to help us. So I absolutely support the economic policies that I believe a Trump administration would bring to the table. I think it's the best thing for the Illinois 17th compared to the Biden-Harris agenda. However, and you'll see this through the story of my life, I am an independent thinker. I am someone who listens and says, okay, why are we just following the status quo? Why is this the pre-assumed result? What could we be doing better? How could we be bringing more people into the equation, into the conversation, to really get more perspectives? That is the way I lead. That is the way I run my small business. That is the way I've worked with my campaign team. And I will absolutely be that leader as a representative for this congressional district. And all I have to say is watch out, Washington, D.C.
Esther Joy King, the Republican candidate for the Illinois 17th Congressional District. Well, early voting has already begun in both Iowa and Illinois. Absentee ballots have been mailed to voters who requested them. There are also early voting centers that are opening up throughout the area to ease congestion come Election Day. And you can go to your county clerk's website in Illinois or the auditor's office website in Iowa counties to see sample ballots, find your voting locations, and get other valuable voting information. Next week on The Cities, we'll feature the two candidates running for the Iowa 2nd Congressional District, Rita Hart and Marionette Miller Meeks. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and now streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time as we talk about the issues on The Cities.
Wheeland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.